Joining us now are our political regulars, columnists David Brooks of the New York Times and E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post. Welcome back to both of you.
Good to be with you.
When I asked you both last Friday about the potential consequences of that spill in the Gulf, frankly, I didn't think we'd still be following it a week later. It's bigger than we thought. There's some federal malfeasance alleged, just heard what the president said. David, first, is it a game changer on energy policy?
I don't think so. I was pessimistic last week, and I'm even more pessimistic this week. I think what's happened in the past week is what's gone from a technical spill now seems like a systemic spill with problems in the government, problems in the company. So it seems like a wider thing. The question is this energy bill, which John Kerry and Joe Lieberman actually sort of have re-announced this week, is it going anywhere? And I still think this spill paradoxically makes it much harder for it to go anywhere, because legitimately there's going to be a moratorium on offshore oil exploration. And if you knock that off, you've really knocked out the coalition you need to pass this thing.
EJ, what do you think about the spill in politics?
Well, I think it is a partial game changer in politics. The president really went on the offensive today. FDR had his famous trilogy of Republican congressmen, Martin, Barton, and Fish, and you have a nice corporate trinity here, BP, Transocean, and Halliburton. And he also went after the management of the Minerals Management Service and implicitly attacked the way it was run under President Bush. You don't have to be a liberal to believe the Bush-Cheney administration had a cozy relationship with oil companies. You just had to be sentient. And so I think this is an argument that's going to have some legs to it. And, you know, when you look at these elections this year, Democrats have to shift some of the public's anger away from government and toward the corporate sector. I think they're doing that on Wall Street reform, as they've wisely renamed financial reform. And I think they're now doing it with the oil spill.
But what the American people see is the marriage between corporate and governmental power, and that's what we're upset about. It's not really a partisan issue that the agency was captured by the oil industry. Every agency is captured by oil industries. It happened under Obama. It happened under Bush.
I disagree with that. I mean, I think that the Bush administration's relationship with the oil companies, the secret meetings Cheney had when they wrote their energy bills, I mean, this is a very deep relationship on a good part of the Republican side. And I think there is a real potential to turn this into a partisan issue.
David?
Well, I guess I think if you look at the anger that's out there, just speaking politically, the anger is against the axis of Wall Street and Washington, the axis of corporations and Washington. Even the energy bill, which I support, believe me, there's plenty of payoffs to people, the industries you need to get this thing passed. So I think just speaking politically, what the American people are upset about, it's not corporations or government. It's both in the way they're intermingled.
Second item, the other big political development this week was President Obama's nomination of Elena Kagan to succeed Justice John Paul Stevens on the Supreme Court. You both wrote columns about her, obviously. EJ, you wrote that you know her, you like her, you expect that in her confirmation hearings she'll give the senators no more and no less than John Roberts did, which isn't much. Why?
Well, because there is no incentive in this system to give any more or less. And if things are asked of Kagan that were not asked of John Roberts, it's clearly a double standard. What strikes me, and David sort of wrote a column about Kagan and an earlier column about Roberts, and what strikes me is how similar they are. They only lack in common the fact that he was a circuit court judge and she wasn't. She was named in her. The Republicans held up her nomination back then. It just never got anywhere. But as someone who is well-liked, widely known by establishment lawyers on both sides, they are very similar people. And so I think she's going to sail through. Good thing happened to her this week. Scott Brown, Republican of Massachusetts, came out and defended her on the issue of allowing military recruiters on the Harvard Law School campus. She allowed them on, but indirectly, not formally, and she signed a brief because of her opposition to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Scott Brown stood up for her respect for the military, which, by the way, is a view I heard her express privately. So I think she's had a good week so far.
David, you described her as someone whom we don't know that much about intellectually what she actually believes in, because you discovered someone who has tactically kept herself undisclosed all this time.
Yeah, what I did was I went back and I read all of the, or at least as many of the public speeches and statements that I could get my hands on. And in person, everybody I know, I don't know her, but everybody I know who knows her, right and left, admires her, likes her, said she did a very good job as Harvard Law School dean. But what struck me about these speeches, going back a long time, was her reticence about expressing an opinion on anything. In her late In her early 20s, she really was quite opinionated, and stuff has come out about Liz Holtzman and other candidates she worked for. She was quite passionate. Then suddenly everything clammed up. And so when you read the speeches, they're designed not to give you an opinion, but to not commit herself to anything in public. And that sort of caution, I understand the incentives which drive a potential Supreme Court justice to that sort of caution, but I still feel compelled to protest against it.
It's sort of like the opposite of those partisan review writers who chose in their terms to be contentious intellectuals. She chose to be an uncontentious intellectual.
Yeah, and it's paid off. I mean, she's had a very good career, very productive career, and I assume she'll get approved to the Supreme Court. I just, you know, and there's so many pressures in life, which all really serious legal minds face, to be very reticent. And a lot of people do not succumb to that. They just let it rip because they feel they want to contribute to the world of ideas. She was reticent, and I sort of a little disturbed by that.
But so was John Roberts. And, you know, it's funny, Kagan wrote a very kind of puckish piece about the whole confirmation process years ago and referred to its how vacuous it could be. And I just can't resist paraphrasing Barry Goldwater and say, in these circumstances, vacuity in the quest for confirmation is no vice.
E.J. Dionne and David Brooks, thanks to both of you.
Thank you.